Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
Swell.
I'm tired, but like not tired, but tired. I don't know what's happening anymore. How is French?
Same old, same old. Just French, you know.
The parents and my machine rajeunir. We finished chapter 5 and they're babies now because they aged backwards. Oh. It was really weird. Yeah. Love French class. Mr. Kenny, if you're listening, I actually do really like your class because I got to talk to Isabella like the entire time.
That's good.
It's not really because of the French part.
It's true.
I don't mind French though. It's like language and I like languages. So.
I don't mind French. I just don't.
You don't like your teacher. I don't want to go to math on Tuesday because my teacher was away last week because his daughter had to get a COVID test. And so he wasn't allowed to be there, obviously. And so we had this supply teacher. But the supply teacher taught us in like a different way than our teacher normally teaches us. And I like the supply teacher's way better, I'm not gonna lie. But like now we have a test on like everything that we learned while he was away on Wednesday and we get back on Tuesday.
Oh.
And so I'm a little worried for that.
You'll be okay. It's fine.
It'll be fine. I have a high enough mark that I can kind of fudge up a test and
yeah, you're okay.
Still get a high honors. So sometimes hard work, but this is supposed to be the easiest test that we do. So I'm just going to pray. I don't even know anymore. What are you guys doing for Easter? Everyone that's listening, I'm sure this will be up before Easter weekend's over because it shouldn't take me like 3 full days to edit.
If you're celebrating Easter, how is it? What's going on?
If you're just happy to get school off, you know what? That is completely valid. Valid.
We get a 4-day weekend. Oh my god.
Woohoo. And then we have a break, but we're also in lockdown. So what are we going to do? Stare at the walls. Yeah, Douglas, I don't know what to do with you anymore. Yeah, I don't know. Easter's here. I had to do an Easter project in French class.
You did?
Where I talked about, yeah, it was just like a speaking task about like Easter's past, like traditions that we do with our families that we could use in parfait. Oh. And I talked about the time that I got lost at Great Wolf Lodge, where I got lost. I didn't actually get lost. Well, I thought I did. My dad and my brother went to the bathroom, didn't tell me. And there was like a massive line because it was Great Wolf Lodge at Easter. And they came back like half an hour later and I was fully crying with this male lifeguard who was trying to help me. Yeah, I don't know. Easters are just like a time, you know?
Such a time.
I thought I saw the Easter Bunny once when I was, like, 9 with my cousins. Yeah. I'm just not going to elaborate on that anymore because I don't know how we thought we saw the Easter Bunny. We did see something white. I don't know. Maybe it was, like, no, my dog then was, like, black and brown. I honestly don't know. Yeah. Maybe someone's cat snuck in to our house. Juno. I don't think he was alive then. I don't think Juno was alive. Okay, so y'all, welcome to, in case you didn't know, welcome to Not So Bloody Mary podcast. I don't know why you'd be listening to this without having listened to any episodes before.
But if you are.
Because, yeah, if you are, like, hi, but I would go back, you don't have to listen to the Anne Boleyn episodes, but maybe start from the beginning of Mary Tudor.
Yeah.
Just... you're going to be a little confused.
That's why you're here. For Mary.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would be here for her too. But, like, yeah, I'm Quinn. That's Grace.
Hi.
We're tired.
Yeah.
So done. Okay, so when we last saw Mary, she signed the oath, Mary.
Oh, man.
And Catherine of Aragon often... the afterlife died a little inside, except she's already dead, so I don't know.
Who knows? this point.
I just, she signed the oath that acknowledges the fact that she was illegitimate and that her father was the supreme head of the Church of England. Yeah. That was very hard for Mary.
Mm-hmm.
She was, you know, 20 years old. Not, your brain's not fully matured then, and also, that's still hard, even if your brain is fully matured, as is evident by the fact that her mother never signed it, although I don't know how mature her brain was. Okay, so when Mary, like, was like, all right, I'll sign the oath, court was, like, really happy. There was incredible rejoicing, because they loved her, right? Like, yeah. She's grown up in front of court, and so they miss her. She was restored to favor, and she got acknowledged as the king's daughter once more. I'm pretty sure they all knew she was the king's daughter, but I guess Henry just, like, wasn't doing anything that would acknowledge her. And they offered her a really big new wardrobe, and she got to choose some servants, which, that's fun. Cromwell returned to Hunsdon, which is where she was. I'm pretty sure Elizabeth was also there. So Mary's just chilling. The two little, I can't. Cromwell came to Hunsdon with a letter from Henry, and kneeling on the ground, he begged Mary's pardon for his former harsh conduct. I'm going to say Cromwell is begging Mary's pardon. He's not begging Mary's pardon as Henry, because I don't think Henry would have done that.
Yeah.
But Cromwell knows that he needs to, like, Henry, now Mary's going to be back in Henry's favor. So if he wants to stay in Henry's favor, he needs to apologize for how he treated Mary. Because if Mary's upset with how she was treated, she can complain to Henry. And then Henry, even though he was the one to order that harsh treatment, will take it out on Cromwell. Because Anne's not left to take it out on. Maybe he'll take it out on Elizabeth. I don't know. She's fine, guys. Don't worry. She's just neglected. She'll be fine. Will her brain be okay? No. I don't know. But she will live to 60, so she's good. 3 weeks later, Mary journeyed to Hackney. Don't know where Hackney is, but somewhere in Britain, for a secret reunion with her father. And it was their first meeting for 5 years. And that's a long time.
That's a long time.
The last time she had seen her father, she was a young teenager, and she was now a woman of 20. Sometimes, Henry, do you ever just go, what is wrong with me? Chapuis wrote that the kindness shown by Henry to, well, he said by the king to the princess. She's not a princess, guys. Just because she got re-acknowledged doesn't mean that she's a princess again. She's still Lady Mary. She will never become Princess Mary again. I mean, she thinks she is. But the people that write the laws in the country, no. He said that Henry showed her inconceivable kindness because he regretted that he had been so long separated from her. And he showed her such love and affection and such brilliant promises for the future that no father could have behaved better towards his daughter. That just sounds like emotional manipulation to me.
Oh, it does.
Sorry that I've treated you like crap for 5 years, Mary. I love you so much. We're going to have such a good future together. And of course, Jane Seymour's there.
Of course,
she's there. She gave Mary a diamond ring. Obviously, Henry paid for this diamond ring. I mean, like, they were married by now, so, like, it was from, like, her privy purse, but Henry pays for that, I think. So, Jane Seymour doesn't have her own money, I don't think. Henry gave her 1,000 crowns to kind of spend on whatever she wanted. I don't know if he should have done that. She has a gambling problem. They spent one night together, and then Henry and Jane left on Friday, July 7th, and he promised that she would be brought to court to take her place immediately after the queen. That actually makes sense, because there's no other kids that are Henry's other than Elizabeth, and she is younger than Mary, so she would be after Mary. And also, all of Henry's sisters are dead at this point, I think. And his other one, if Margaret's not dead yet, she's somewhere in Scotland. She's not there, but Mary is definitely dead.
I see.
Yet beneath, like, the shiny veneer of reconciliation, Chapuis observed that there were a few drachmas of gall and bitterness mixed with the sweet food of paternal kindness. So before she returned to court, she was forced to write to the emperor, that's her cousin Charles, and his sister, who is Mary of Hungary, regent of the Netherlands, and she had to confirm her submission to her father as head of the church. She had to confirm that she acknowledged that her mother's marriage was unlawful, and she had to tell them that it was her decision to freely renounce her right to the throne.
I see.
Yeah. So for Henry, that was just a means of emphasizing his victory over the emperor.
Right.
Yeah. So basically, he was like, Mary, these are the people that have been trying to help you the most that aren't like your mom. So you need to write to them and say, this is all my doing. This is what I want, even though he knows that that's probably not what she wants. Although, to be honest, he might actually think that that's what he wants because he thinks that the world revolves around him. So I don't know. He told, according to Chapuis, he told the princess, that her obstinate resistance to his will had been encouraged. I think this is like, yeah, okay, Chapuis is talking to the emperor. That Mary's obstinate resistance to Henry's will had been encouraged and strengthened by the trust that she had in the emperor, but that now she ought to know that the emperor could not help or favor her in the least as long as Henry lived. Yeah. But Henry gave her a present to celebrate her obedience.
Wow.
Yeah. On one side, there was like a picture of Henry and Jane. On the other side, a picture of Mary. And the Latin inscription read, "Obedience leads to unity. Unity to constancy and a quiet mind, and these are treasures of inestimable worth. For God so valued humility that he gave his only son, a perfect exemplar of modesty, who in his obedience to his divine father taught lessons of obedience and devotion."
Hmm.
Yeah, let's, Henry and Catherine really just like gaslight gatekeep girl boss their daughter.
Yeah.
They really, like, I'm sorry. Catherine's a great mom when Mary was little. Henry was, like, slightly absent, but pretty good. They got really bad as soon as she turned, like, 15. Mary's submission cost her really a lot. Chapuis warned the emperor that this whole thing has tormented Mary more than you might think. She escaped from the greatest danger that she was ever going to be in. But she now asked Chapuis to obtain a secret papal absolution, otherwise her conscience could not be at perfect ease. So a papal absolution is like you sign one thing, but you like in your heart you believe something else. So you ask the Pope to really like to make a statement or whatever that you actually don't have to mean it.
Right.
So basically she was like, I know that I said this, but I was forced to do so under pain of death. And so it's not real. And he was like, yeah, I got you. Honestly, thanks to the Pope for doing that, because that probably made her feel a lot better.
Yeah.
On June 30th, 1536, just days after Mary's submission, a new act of succession had actually been introduced into the House of Lords. Mary's legitimacy and her position of heir were not restored. Both of Henry's first marriages were declared invalid, and Elizabeth was stripped of the title of princess and removed from the line of succession. The succession instead was given to the heirs of Jane Seymour, or, as the act declared, any subsequent wife. He was prepared, guys. He was prepared. I mean, that she could die in childbirth, so.
Yeah.
But I feel like also if Jane read that, she would have been like, oh, okay.
All right, then.
I'm feeling a little scared now. Thanks, Henry. Henry was given, like, unprecedented powers to nominate whoever he wanted to be his successor, irrespective of illegitimacy, in case he had no children with the queen. This probably was because he might have intended to promote his bastard son, Henry Fitzroy, but 3 weeks later, Richmond died, so RIP to Henry Fitzroy, probably of tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those who wished to, like, return to the old ways of England now look to Mary's influence to do so. It was hoped that, like, through Mary's means and through her, like, wisdom and discretion, that she might little by little bring back the king, her father, and the whole of the English nation back to the right path. A lot to put on the shoulders of a 20-year-old, but let's be honest, this 20-year-old probably wanted that to be put on her shoulders, since I'm pretty sure that she saw that as, like, her duty. Let's look at what she did as soon as she became queen. So, In October, there was unrest in Lincolnshire, and over the following weeks, rebellion spread across the northern counties. Under the leadership of the lawyer Robert Ask, the rebels, who were like 40,000 in number, demanded the return of the old faith, the restoration of the monasteries that were ransacked in the dissolution of the last year, the return of the old religion, and that the Lady Mary may be made legitimate and the former statute therein annulled. So that's like the Pilgrimage of Grace. That's what that's called. Go, if you don't know what that is, go listen to another podcast on it, because we don't have time for me to dive really deeply into it. There's loads of other podcasts that are on the Pilgrimage of Grace, I'm sure. I know that Katie and Nathan did one, but it was on their Patreon. So if you have Queen's Podcast Patreon, go listen to that. I think Tudor I Hardly Know Her did one too. So among the rebels were Lord Hussey, who was Mary's old steward, and Lord Darcy, who had for many months been petitioning Charles V to intervene in England. But yeah, so it didn't happen. But Mary got to spend Christmas at court for the first time in a long time. On December 22nd, Henry, Jane, and Mary rode from Westminster through the city of London to Greenwich. Before them went the mayor and aldermen of the city. So the choir of St. Paul's, the Bishop of London, and two priests from every parish church in London stood outside St. Paul's to watch the royal procession. Elizabeth also came to Christmas that year at court. It was like the first time that she saw her dad, I think, since her mom was killed. So honestly, that would probably be like a shock to Henry, because like I know that like 15 to 20 is like a big jump. But I think that really the only things that really happen to you between 15 and 20 is like your face kind of matures. Between 2.5 to like three years and 3 months, there's a lot of change that happens. She would have been a lot taller, a lot like more like a child and less like a baby. So yeah. In April, the Privy Council recommended that Mary and Elizabeth were like maid of some estimation. So like I think maid maybe back into the line of succession. And since Mary was the elder, which meant that she was more ready to make an alliance than Elizabeth, like through marriage, it might please the king to declare her so according to his laws, so that like she could be more attractive as a bride, because, you know, important people in Europe don't want to marry an illegitimate daughter. But even though Charles, the emperor, was pressing for a match with Mary for Don Louis of Portugal, who was the younger brother of the King of Portugal, the advice wasn't taken because Jane was pregnant, and Henry was optimistic, rightly so actually, that it would be a son. Any negotiation for a betrothal would now depend on public recognition of Mary's illegitimacy.
Right, I see.
So that's fun and kind and sweet. At 2 in the morning of Friday, October 12th, 1537, Jane Seymour gave birth to a son at Hampton Court Palace. He was actually born on the feast of St. Edward the Confessor, so he was therefore named after the royal saint. Pop off, Edward. You're alive now.
Good job.
Good job, buddy. So proud of you for being born. Actually, good job, Jane.
Good job, Jane.
Edward, you did nothing. 3 days after the birth, Mary got to stand as godmother at the font in the newly decorated Chapel Royal at Hampton Court. There was a plague during when Edward was born. So obviously, like we know from COVID, if there's a plague, you don't have as many people gathered in one place. So Edward's baptism wasn't like, it limited the size. The plague was limiting the size of the amount of people that could come. But it was still a very lavish ceremony because Henry's not sparing any expense. Mm-hmm. But also, like, he doesn't want Edward to get the plague because he's, look how much he's gone through for this baby. 3-day-old babies die pretty easily, unfortunately, since they're, like, brand new. But after the prince was baptized and confirmed, the heralds proclaimed him Edward, son and heir to the King of England, Duke of Cornwall, and Earl of Chester. I think that his titles are Duke of Cornwall and Earl of Chester. He doesn't get Prince of Wales yet because it's like a whole nother ceremony. Amid a torchlit procession, Mary led her 4-year-old sister Elizabeth. Elizabeth got to carry, I don't remember what it's called. I think she got to carry like the little gown thing that they wrap them in. the chrism cloth or something. I don't know. She got to carry something. Both of them were part of it, but they're not going to make a 4-year-old be the godmother. Yeah. Can you imagine? She wouldn't do a good job. Back to the queen's apartments for the giving of the baptismal gifts. Mary gave Jane a golden cup and then gave 30 pounds to Edward's nurse, midwife, and cradle rockers. I don't know what Elizabeth gave. She probably didn't choose it herself. I mean, she might have. I don't know. Big fires were lit on the streets of London and bells rung across the country. But unfortunately, Jane fell seriously ill. Jane. The week of... So we don't actually know, like, exactly what she died of. A lot of people argue about that.
I didn't know that.
Something to do with... Yeah, it's, like, something to do with childbirth, but, like, it's not, like, childbirth because she got sick. Not right away, but, like, she was still kind of sick. Some people think it was internal bleeding. Some people think it was, like, diarrhea, I think. Some people think it was just, like, childbirth. Some people think that there was a C-section that they performed on her, and then she died because of that. That's not true.
What do you think?
I honestly don't know. So, I've read a bunch of books about it, but I'm going to be honest, I don't read a lot of books about Jane. Because she's kind of boring to read about. No offense, Jane. This book says that she died of puerperal fever, which I think is like childbirth fever, which is what most people say that she died of. So, like, basically, she wasn't kept in good enough condition after she gave birth, and so she caught a fever. Yeah. Thanks, Henry. A lot of people think that Henry was so focused on Edward that he forgot about Jane, and then Jane died. But, yeah, by the evening of the 24th, she died.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Jane. R.I.P. Jane. You deserve so much better. Everyone here deserves so much better. Except for Henry. He deserves the grave. Let's be honest. He wouldn't have been a good priest, though. So, like, I don't know. In the days immediately following the queen's death, Mary was too grief-stricken to take part in any of the, like, initial mourning stuff. And so the Marchioness of Exeter had to take her place, which is Gertrude Courtenay. She worked against Anne, so I don't like her. But as she gathered her composure, she actually was chief mourner at dirges and masses in the Chapel Royal, accompanied by her ladies. And on November 8th, she rode behind Jane's coffin at the head of the funeral, like, procession thing. And her steed was covered in black trappings, and the procession made its way all the way from Hampton Court to Windsor. Upon the coffin was an effigy of Jane in robes of state, a crown upon her head, and a scepter in her right hand. 4 days later, she was buried between the stalls and altar of St. George's Chapel. I'm pretty sure she lies in Westminster now. I don't know. She's buried with Henry and his parents. That's all I know. And, like, a random infant child of, like, Queen Anne. Yeah. Edward spent his first Christmas with Henry at Greenwich and was with him again in May 1538 at the Royal Hunting Lodge at Royston, where the king spent, like, all day with Edward and played with him. And then he held him, like, in a window so that the people could see him to comfort them because, you know, Edward's their only heir at the moment. So they would like him to be healthy, please. Because, like, no one's as worried right now as they are later. Henry had Edward very late in life, and Henry isn't the most healthy after Jane dies. So everyone's a little worried that Henry's going to die before Edward is ready to rule, which he did, but whatever. But it was Mary, who is now 22, who, out of the family, was most involved in Edward's early upbringing. She was actually his most frequent family visitor. She spent most of her time at Hampton Court, and so she was just, like, a boat ride across the river from her brother's nursery at Richmond. She visited him in November 1537, and in March, April, and May the following year. As Jane Dormer, one of Mary's gentlewomen, later noted, I just want to know if Natalie's really just to Jane Dormer. I'm going to assume so. I don't think Dormer is, like, a super popular name, but, like, I don't live in Britain. But, yeah, Natalie Dormer, we know you're listening. Let us know. DM her on her Instagram. Just ask her. When Mary came to see Edward, as Jane Dormer said, he took special content in her company. He asked her many questions, and he, like, told her secrets. And he gave her respect and reverence like she was actually his mom. Let's be honest, Mary could be his mom since she was 21 when he was born. And for Tudor times, that would be, like, late for a princess to have her first baby. So, she offered him advice in some things that concerned just himself and in other things that also concerned her. And she showed, like, a lot of affection and care for him.
Aww.
She was really nice. He needed a mom. But then I just think about what happened later, and then I, like, cry. Lady Lyle visited all the royal children at Hampton Court in November. She wrote to her husband that Edward was the goodliest babe that she ever set her eye upon. She also saw Lady Mary and Lady Elizabeth. I love how it's just, like, this is, like, the full thing that she wrote. His Grace Edward is the goodliest babe that ever I set mine eye upon. I pray God to make him an old man, for I think I should never weary of looking on him. I saw also my Lady Mary and my Lady Elizabeth.
They're there.
Since Edward was now acknowledged as the king's heir, the rivalry between Mary and Elizabeth abated. I don't know how aware Elizabeth was of this rivalry. Because, like, I feel like the rivalry is Mary creating it and also adults around them creating it. Because I don't think that, you know, 4 or 5-year-old Elizabeth is coming up with this herself. Like, she probably read the tension, but she doesn't know what's going on. All three siblings were now together under one roof. As Henry mourned the death of Jane Seymour, the French king and the emperor agreed upon a truce together, and they began peace talks that were mediated by the Pope. So I guess they're in, like, couples therapy with the Pope as their therapist. Now, with the growing threat of a Catholic offensive against him, the search for a new wife for Henry and a husband for Mary was used in an effort to, like, try and forge an alliance that would keep France and the emperor apart. Offers of marriage alliances were made to the Empire in France for a match between Mary and either Don Louis of Portugal or the Duke of Orléans. Henry considered the prospect of marriage with the Dowager Duchess of Milan, that's Christina, and for a time with Mary of Guise. So Henry delayed his thing with Mary of Guise for too long, and in May she was betrothed to James V of Scotland. He is the son of Henry's sister. And Mary of Guise and James V of Scotland have Mary, Queen of Scots, together. Yeah, but because she's now betrothed to a Scottish guy, that renews the old alliance between France and Scotland, which is, like, this thing that they have had for, like, a bajillion trillion years, that just, like, they will always help each other.
Yeah.
It's annoying sometimes for all the other countries. Even though Henry and Mary were publicly reconciled, he still regarded her and her supporters with some suspicion. In the summer of 1538, Cromwell sent her a letter of warning because she had taken some strangers into her house. The incident had been relayed to the king in such a way that put, like, her trustworthiness in doubt, and Mary responded that, like, it didn't happen. She feared that that someone reported it to him in, like, the worst way possible to make him think that. But nevertheless, she promises him that from now on she will refrain from doing anything that could be taken wrong, so that no one will have anything bad to speak of. She also assured Cromwell that she would not lodge anyone in her house again, and added that she would rather endure physical harm than lose even the smallest part of the king's favor. Fun. Amid renewed fears of war, Henry sought to alienate Mary from the emperor and try and draw her more securely to him. At the end of August 1538, she was instructed to complain to the imperial ambassadors, Chapuia and Mendoza, about the emperor's failure to conclude the Portuguese alliance. And Cromwell wrote to Mary outlining the supposed grievances that she was to present to the ambassadors when they visit her at Havering. She did that, but she told Chapuia later that she actually held the emperor in really high esteem. and that she was so affectionately attached to him that it seemed almost impossible to have such an affection and love for a kinsman. She didn't believe what her father said about him, and she stood ready to do whatever he asked of her in the issue of marriage.
Oh, Mary.
Mary, why did he do that? Chapuis is fearing for her safety again, so he raised again the prospect of escape. Mary was hesitant this time, and she said that, like, it might happen that her dad might actually show her more consideration now or give her more respect and treat her better than she had been before. If that were the case, she would much prefer to remain in England and to conform herself entirely to her father's commands and wishes. Yeah. In late August 1538, Sir Geoffrey Pole, the younger brother of Reginald Pole, was arrested for treason and imprisoned in the Tower. Under interrogation, he implicated his elder brother, Henry Pole, Lord Montague, Sir Edward Neville, who is Montague's brother-in-law, and Henry Courtenay, Marquess of Exeter, who was the king's cousin, an alleged conspiracy that sought to deprive the king of his supremacy and marry Mary to Reginald Pole. By November 4th, Exeter, his wife Gertrude, and their 12-year-old son, Edward, were all committed to the Tower. I hate when they send kids there. makes me really mad. Well, because Edward would be, like, the heir after Exeter, but, like, I don't care. Soon after, the elderly Countess of Salisbury was interrogated and her house was searched. That's Margaret Pole. She was convicted without a trial of aiding and abetting her sons Henry and Reginald and having committed and perpetrated diverse and sundry other detestable and abominable treasons, and she was imprisoned. On Monday, December 9th, Montague, Sir Edward Neville, and Exeter were tried. Their verdict was unanimously guilty, and they were executed.
Yeah.
For Mary, the execution of so many people who had supported her and her mother served as, like, a really sharp reminder of her father's capacity for vengeance and cruelty. Chapuis reflected that it would seem that they want to leave her as few friends as possible. So she's really having a really fun time. But Henry is very scared right now that there's going to be a war against him. So he's keen to secure alliances among the Lutheran princes of Germany. In mid-January 1539, the English ambassador Christopher Mont was sent to the Duke of Saxony to discuss the prospect of a double match between Henry and the Duke of Cleves' eldest daughter, Anne, and between Mary and Cleves himself. Cromwell instructed Mont to make clear that although Mary was only the king's natural daughter, she was endowed, as all the world knows, with such beauty, learning, and virtues that when the rest was agreed, no man would stick for any part concerning her beauty and goodness. So he's like, yeah, she's illegitimate, but, like, she's so awesome and she's so pretty. though the negotiations for a marriage with Marian, the Duke of Cleves, came to absolutely nothing. By the autumn, an alliance was secured between Henry and Anne of Cleves. I'm going to say, though, William of Cleves, so, like, the Duke, a lot of historians think he might have been, like, abusive to his sisters and his mom, so maybe it's good that Mary didn't go over and marry him. But the Duke was a natural ally for Henry because he was a committed Habsburg opponent, but he wasn't a Lutheran, because, you know, that Henry doesn't like Lutherans. He might have he created his own church. He doesn't want their church. An agreement was reached in October, and as negotiations continued for a match with Mary and yet another of the German princes, Anne of Cleves began her journey to England. Meanwhile, the Earl of Southampton was sent to Mary to instruct her that she should think about, it means this is probably going to happen, the prospect of marriage with the Lutheran Duke Philip of Bavaria. That's the guy who's played by the guy who plays Captain Hook in Once Upon a Time in the Tudors. Philip. Oh my god. And Sarah Bulger and him were both in Once Upon a Time later, and he was her first on-screen kiss. Just saying. Because she was, like, 18. No, 19 in season 4 of the Tudors. but Duke Philip was now in England in advance of Anne of Cleves' arrival, and Mary responded that although she knew that this matter of her marriage was, like, really important, she would never enter that kind of religion. So she's like, he's a Lutheran, not doing it. If I had to marry him, I would choose to rather remain a maid for my entire life. So she's like, I'd rather, like, never marry than marry him. Although she committed herself to his majesty. So she's like, if my dad makes me do it, I'll do it. But, like, I don't want to. on December 22nd, she agreed to meet the Duke in the gardens of Westminster, They spoke partly in German with an interpreter and partly in Latin, and the Duke declared his intention to take Mary up as his wife if it were agreeable to her, and was bold enough to kiss her. I would say that was probably, like, her first kiss. Because who else would kiss the king's daughter? Yeah. Thanks, Philip. She's going to marry another Philip, so. When he left England in the new year, Duke Philip believed that he was soon going to be returning to marry the princess. The French ambassador, Charles de Marillac, expected the wedding to take place within 10 or 15 days. And in December, a draft treaty was drawn up. But by January, word reached Rome that Mary had already gotten married without the advice or knowledge of the emperor. Chapuis sought desperately to learn if marriage of her rumors to a Lutheran duke were true. They were not. For Henry, these negotiations had never actually been intended as anything more than a ploy to strengthen his hand against the emperor at a time when he feared that there was a Catholic crusade against him. Okay. Yeah. Marillac, the French ambassador, thought that the king would marry Mary out of England in case the crown of England, like, in case someone said that Edward couldn't inherit because he wasn't born under the Catholic Church or whatever, and so then Mary would be the next queen. But yeah, so. But Henry would not declare Mary legitimate because that would allow the invalidity of his first marriage to be doubted. But Mary, who was then 26, expressed her situation to one of her chamberwomen, who was actually a spy for Marillac, but, you know, okay. She said that it was folly to think that they would marry her out of England or even in England, for she would be, while her father lived, only Lady Mary, the most unhappy lady in Christendom. Babes. Go girl. See Edward. At 8 in the morning on Tuesday, January 6th, 1540, which was the Feast of the Epiphany, Thomas Cranmer, Archbishop of Canterbury, celebrated the marriage of Henry and Anne of Cleves in the Chapel Royal at Greenwich. Both Mary and Elizabeth attended the service. So Henry just, like, brings them to all his weddings. But not to Jane Seymour's wedding. Can you imagine if he had made his, like, 2.5-year-old watch him marry another woman 11 days after he killed her mom?
That would be
like really bad, but don't worry, he didn't, because he didn't talk to her for like 9 months. 8 months. No. It was a little better. No, 7. I can't actually count. It was like May, but it was like early May when he last saw her, I think, because she was at Greenwich when Anne got arrested. The next morning, Cromwell visited the king in the Privy Chamber. And he asked him how he liked the queen, because, you know, they were supposed to have sex the night before, to, you know, consummate the marriage. But Henry replied, "Surely, as you know, I liked her before not well, but now I like her much worse. For he had felt her belly and her breasts, and therefore, as he could judge, she was no maid." Some people think that that means that she had a baby before. That's, like, a really random take. Allison, we're what? I don't think that anyone other than her thinks that, and she only did it in one of her, like, fictional novels, but people are going to read those and think it's true. The king continued that struck him so much in the heart that he had neither will nor courage to proceed any further in matters, so he left her as good a maid as he found her. For the next 6 months, despite repeated efforts, the marriage remained unconsummated, so they never had any sex, which is what they needed, because they need another baby boy. Also, if you don't ever sleep together, the marriage isn't valid. By the summer, Henry was done with Anne of Cleves. It's been, like, 6 months, my dude.
Oh, man.
My dude, no. But he was like, I can afford to break the alliance now, because the Franco-Imperial alliance had become strained. Some weeks before, he had also started an affair with one of Anne's maids, Catherine Howard, a niece of the Duke of Norfolk. The French ambassador reported that the king is so amorous of her that he knows not how to make sufficient demonstrations of his affection. He caresses her more than he did the others, and he lavishes her with jewels. As Henry's infatuation with Catherine grew, his calls for a divorce from Anne became more strident. Yay, no. At 3 p.m. on Saturday, June 10th, 1540, Cromwell was arrested in the council chamber by the Duke of Norfolk. His goods were seized and confiscated, and he was sent to the Tower, and he was charged with heresy, and treason and of plotting to marry Mary. He lost Henry's confidence, and so Henry's like, bye, Felicia.
That was so long ago.
Do you remember that? 2016. Good times. Oh, I hated 2016. On July 28th, 1540, which was 3 weeks after the annulment of his marriage to Anne of Cleves. So, like, it's been, you know, 21 days this time, at least? I don't know. It's still really, we're moving on fast, Henry. Henry married his fifth wife, Catherine Howard, at Oatlands Palace in Surrey. She was the niece of Thomas Howard. We don't know how old she was. This book says she was 19. I'm pretty sure the agreed upon age now is probably 17 when they got married and 19 when she was executed.
So fun.
Which is so fun. Yeah. So, like, she could have been 15. She could have been 19. Some people say she was 21, but that's, like, what? I don't know. I just say 17 because that's what most people agree, and it's also, like, in the middle, so it works. By November, Marillac was writing to the French king that the new queen has completely acquired the king's grace, and the other, so that's Anne of Cleves, is no more spoken of than if she were dead. Relations between Mary and Catherine Howard were initially very much not good. The new queen was a cousin of Anne Boleyn. Mary, that's like goodbye on Mary's standards. Get out. And she's also 7 years younger than Mary, probably. Which is a whole Elizabeth younger. She literally is a whole Elizabeth younger because it's 1540 and Elizabeth is 7 years old. Yeah. On December 5th, Chapuis told the emperor's sister that Catherine tried to remove two of Mary's attendants because she believed that Mary was showing her less respect than she had to any of her predecessors. Mary's behavior improved afterwards. It was reported that she found means to get along with Catherine, and so she thinks that her maids will remain. They were really too different in temperament and too similar in age to ever be close. But relations began to settle down. The king and queen went to visit Edward at the request of Lady Mary, but chiefly because Catherine wanted to. It was a successful visit, and upon that occasion, the king granted Mary full permission to reside at court, and Catherine was like, yeah, do it. But ever present for Mary, there were reminders of her father's vengeance and the fact that she could possibly die as well for her perceived disloyalty if it ever happened. 68-year-old Margaret Pole, the woman who Mary had referred to as her second mother, was taken to the scaffold on the slope of Tower Hill. At 7 in the morning of May 27, 1541, she was brought up to die. She commended her soul to God, prayed for the king, and requested to be remembered to the Princess Mary. And then she got executed. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Oh, we already talked about it. I'm tired of it. In January, Catherine and Lady Rochford, her lady of the bedchamber, George Boleyn's widow, who had helped arrange the illicit meetings, were declared guilty of treason. On February 10th, Catherine was moved from Sion, which is the abbey that she was staying in while they were, like, interrogating her, to the Tower. And she passed beneath London Bridge, where the heads of her lovers, Dereham and Culpeper, who had been executed the previous year, were still hanging. Yeah. 2 days later, on Sunday the 12th, she was told to prepare herself for death. According to Chapuis, she asked to have the block brought in to her so that she might see how to place herself. Gave it to her, and she practiced. Catherine seems to have a lot of anxiety about doing things perfectly, and so she didn't want to do that wrong because it was like the most important thing that she was ever going to do in her brain. So yeah, early the following morning, Catherine got executed. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
It is sad.
It's really sad. Okay. She's like 3 years older than me. Following Catherine Howard's execution, Mary enjoyed far greater favor and presided over court feasts as if she were actually queen. As a New Year's gift, Henry presented her with rings, silver plate, and other jewels, among which were two rubies of inestimable value. Unfortunately, during those months, Mary suffered repeatedly from chronic ill health, which can be linked to anxiety, depression, and irregular menstruation, although the symptoms varied widely from one episode to the next. In March and April, she had a strange fever that gave her heart palpitations and was so bad sometimes that she seemed like she was dead. On April 22nd, Chapuis told the Queen of Hungary that the princess has been seriously ill and in danger of her life. Yet Mary recovered, and on December 17th, she was summoned to court for the Christmas festivities with, like, a bunch of ladies. Chapuis reported that the king spoke to her in the most gracious and amiable words that a father could address to his daughter. No. But now it's time for Henry to get married again. On July 12th, 1543, Mary and Elizabeth, they're back, attended their father's sixth wedding. Just sixth wedding in the Queen's privy closet at Hampton Court. It was a small ceremony. There was like 20 people in attendance. Stephen Gardiner presided over it. He was the Bishop of Winchester. Henry's bride, who was the twice married Catherine Parr, who was also a former member of Mary's household, had come to the King's attention during Mary's frequent visits to court. Catherine had really long-standing connections with Mary because her mother Maud was one of Catherine of Aragon's ladies-in-waiting. And Catherine Parr was named after Catherine of Aragon, and Aragon had stood as godmother at her baptism. So that's nice, I guess. I don't know. She's dead now, so I don't know what she can do as a godmother. It was soon apparent that Catherine Parr, who was only 4 years older than Mary, was to be more like a friend than a stepmother to her. She sought to improve all the relations between Mary and her father, and soon Chapuis was reporting that the king continues to treat Mary kindly and has made her stay with the new queen, who behaves affectionately towards her. Mary and Catherine were both very, educated, learned women. And even though Catherine had evangelical sympathies, they had, a really close relationship and they studied together a lot. Catherine Parr, brings the royal family back together. That's, her whole shtick. In 1544, under Parr's influence, Mary took up the translation of Erasmus's paraphrases on the four Gospels. The scholar Nicholas Udall, I don't know, was the editor of the book. Catherine funded its publication, and Mary was one of the translators. Unfortunately, ill health prevented Mary from finishing it, and so her chaplain had to complete it. But Catherine wanted Mary to publish it under her name, under Mary's name. She didn't, though, I don't think. But Catherine was like, you should do it! When she was at court, Mary, really thrived in the favor of Catherine Parr. In 1544, a ball was held in February during the visit of the Spanish something, the Duke of Najera. Mary danced elegantly, and she was dressed extravagantly in a gown of gold cloth under a robe of violet velvet with a coronal of large precious stones on her head. Even though Edward was 20 years younger than Mary, he was really protective of his older sister, which is so funny because, she should be protective of him, but he's, a little six-year-old. He's writing to his stepmother, he's six, and he urges her to keep a careful eye on the princess. Preserve her, therefore, I pray you, my dear sister Mary, from all the wiles and enchantments of the evil one, and beseech her to attend no longer to foreign dances and merriments, which do not become a most Christian princess. Okay, six-year-old. What the heck are you doing? At the same time, he praised Mary, and he told her, I like you, even as a brother ought to like a very dear sister, who hath within herself all the embellishments of virtue and honorable station. In the same way that he loved his best clothes most of all, though he seldom wore them, he explained. So he wrote seldom to her, but he loved her most. Okay, she's got a favorite sister. I mean, Mary probably was, kind of like a mom. And so I don't think Edward, they spent time together, but I feel like they're closer in age, they're going to fight more. But I don't know how much they fought. I don't know how often they actually saw each other or were allowed to fight, you know. In February 1544, Parliament passed a new and very radical act of succession because the previous law had bastardized both Mary and Elizabeth. But now Henry was visibly aging and six-year-old Edward was his only heir. So there was a real uncertainty over the Tudor succession. As the new act declared, it standeth only in the pleasure and will of Almighty God, whether the King's Majesty shall have any heirs begotten and procreated between His Highness and his most entirely beloved wife, Queen Catherine, or whether the said Prince Edward shall have issues of his body lawfully begotten. So even though they were still regarded as illegitimate, Mary and then Elizabeth were placed in the line of succession after Edward and his heirs. So that would have been really exciting to both of them. There's a Tudor scene that's cute where Mary's like, Elizabeth, we're going to be back in the Act of Succession. Elizabeth's like, what? It's so sweet. And then she's like, Mary, you could be queen one day. And Mary's like, or you. And then they like curtsy to each other and they're like, Queen Mary, oh my God. Queen Elizabeth. It's just so sweet. you need to finish the Tudors with me. I don't know. That's all. You just need to see that.
Also, the other queens.
Well, also, you haven't met, like, old Elizabeth. She's so sweet. I don't know. She kind of looks like a mix of Natalie and Jonathan. It's kind of cool. On June 26th, the royal children came together with their father at Whitehall for a lavish reception. And it was the first public outing of the reconciled royal family. The reunion was commemorated in the portrait known as the Family of Henry VIII, which was painted by an unknown artist. The picture is dominated by Henry sitting on his throne between his son and heir, the six-year-old Prince Edward, and to emphasize the line of dynastic succession, Edward's mother, the long-since-dead Jane Seymour.
Oh my.
She's just, like, still there. I don't know. On the left stands Mary, and on the right is Elizabeth. Both of them are dressed similarly. The only way that you can tell them apart is the fact that Mary is the taller sister. Even though she played a pretty big part in making Henry and his children get reconciled, Catherine Parr is omitted from the scene. Because it was more than just a family portrait. It was to commemorate the political settlement that was enshrined in the Act of Succession. This was, like, the family that Henry decreed was going to have, like, the succession. It was the king's heirs and the degree of precedence. So she's not allowed to be in it because she hasn't given him any heirs yet. Yeah. With the succession now settled so he can die, he's like, whatever. Henry looked to recapture the glories of his youth by going to war with France. The emperor and the French king had resumed fighting. No surprise. And both sovereigns were once again competing for Henry's favor. Henry made a secret treaty with the emperor in 1543 in February that provided for a joint invasion of France within 2 years. Oh, Henry. But first, Henry needed to secure his northern border by mounting a campaign against Scotland, because Scotland, France, old alliance, blah, blah, blah. At Solway Moss in November 1542, the English beat the Scots. 3 weeks later, King James V died, leaving the kingdom to his, like, six-day-old daughter, Mary.
Baby queen.
Baby queen. Yeah. kings and baby queens never work out well. No offense to any baby kings, baby queens that may be listening. You all know it's true. Henry then sought to, like, subdue Scotland in advance of his invasion in France, and in July 1543, a treaty of peace and dynastic union was signed at Greenwich with Edward, betrothed to Mary, Queen of Scots, not his sister. But within 5 months, it broke down because the Scots reaffirmed their alliance with the French, and Mary went to marry, eventually, she didn't obviously marry him right away, their heir, but he died, so, fun. She did get married to him, and she was Queen of France for, like, not very long. I don't know. Go listen to a Mary Queen of Scots podcast. It's been a really long time since I did any research on her. Preparations were now made for war on two fronts, one with Scotland and one with France. The emperor sought to make Francis relinquish his claim to Milan and support the German princes, not princesses, unfortunately. Henry looked to force him to abandon the cause of Scottish independence. In May 1544, 14,000 troops were sent to Scotland, and a month later, an English force of about 40,000 men invaded France. On July 11th, Henry, despite the fact that he had very swollen, ulcer-ridden legs and couldn't, like, by the end of his reign, he had to, like, have this device that, like, basically was like an elevator to go up and down the stairs because he was so heavy. So, I don't think he should be going to fight in a war, but whatever. But in his absence, Catherine Parr was actually appointed regent of England to rule the country, just like Catherine of Aragon had done 30 years before. And I'm pretty sure that none of his other queens actually got to do that. Anne Boleyn was named regent in case he died, but then she died, so it didn't happen. Yeah. I don't think he named any of his other wives, like, even as possible regents. because Anne Boleyn was, it was if he died and then Elizabeth was like the queen, but Anne would rule for her, but she wouldn't actually rule. She was just like regent, so that like no one would try and hurt Elizabeth. It was a whole thing. As Catherine governed from Hampton Court, she actually brought Mary with her, and Edward and Elizabeth came as well. She's like, yeah, I'm just going to have all the kids here. Little gang gang. But this was like really important because both of her stepdaughters got to see a woman governing and imposing her authority on her male counselors. That's very important for both of them later in life.
Right.
To get to see a woman ruling. Just saying. Yeah. By September, as both sides were like suing for peace, negotiations were revived with the emperor. On October 23rd, Bishops Gardiner and Thomas Thirlby were commissioned to present a three-pronged plan. Charles V would marry Mary, Edward would marry the emperor's daughter, and Elizabeth would marry his son, Philip. Mary's going to marry Philip in like 15 years. And then Philip wants to marry Elizabeth later. No. Charles, I love how Philip was like after Mary died, I'm pretty sure he tried to marry Elizabeth again. Like, Mary literally was made illegitimate because her mom married her, the like brother of her first husband. So what did Philip think was going to happen? I don't know. And they obviously slept together because Mary thought that she was pregnant. I don't know. But Charles didn't respond favorably to that plan because it was very clear to him that Henry was seeking better relations with the emperor merely to secure a stronger negotiating position with France, and so the proposals came to nothing. Guess what's happening now?
Poor Chapuis.
Chapuis is leaving. He has to leave. And that's like Mary's only friend. That's not true. I'm sure she has other friends. But he's like one of her best friends. And in May 1546, he's like sick. So he has to go home. And so he prepares to leave England. And he's been the ambassador for 16 years. 16. That's like a whole Edward plus a whole Elizabeth. Yeah. Wait. Actually, it's almost. That's actually almost true. On May 4th, he went to the Palace of Westminster to bid farewell to the Queen and Mary. Catherine expressed her desire that the friendship between England and Spain was still maintained, but Mary thanked him for the Emperor's good wishes towards her, and in default, in her power to repay the Emperor in any way, she would pray constantly to God for the Emperor to be healthy. Okay, Mary. In February 1546, a plot was hatched to destroy Catherine Parr. Her evangelical beliefs and her growing influence over the king was making her enemies among the religious conservatives at court. Henry's health was deteriorating, which meant that his temper was growing even shorter than it normally was, and he became increasingly irritated by Catherine's debates with him over religion. He complained to Bishop Gardiner that it was, like, annoying when his wife, like, argued with him about religion. And so Gardiner and his fellow conservatives saw like an opportunity to halt the progress of religious reform. They moved to convince Henry that Catherine was to be feared. Gardiner would like murmur in Henry's ear basically that the queen's views were heretical under the law, and that he, with others of his faithful counselors, could give Henry like a list of treasons that she had committed, so that he could see how perilous this was to cherish a serpent within his own bosom. Okay. Gardiner actually secured Henry's agreement for Catherine to be investigated for heresy and for treason. Yeah. Okay, Henry. Her, like, besties, I don't know if she actually liked them. They were just, like, her chief intimates. That's what they're officially called. The ladies Herbert, Lane, and Tyrwhitt were to be questioned, and their closets were to be searched for anything that might incriminate the queen. Fine. In the spring, Anne Askew, a young Lincolnshire gentlewoman who held, like, evangelical opinions, and who was associated with Lady Hertford and Lady Denny, who were both high-ranking women at court, was taken to the Tower, where she was interrogated in an attempt to extract any information that could be used against Catherine. They were like, did the ladies of court not share your opinion? Could you not name a very important person who shared your opinion? She conceded absolutely nothing. Go listen to a podcast on Anne Askew, guys, because she's chill. She was put on the rack and tortured, and she refused to implicate anyone. And then she was revived, and then she was wrecked again. Yeah. The lieutenant of the tower would not perform the second torture, so her interrogators threw off their gowns and became tormentors themselves. As a gentlewoman, Askew should have been protected against torture. Women aren't supposed to be tortured. And the council obviously was kind of mad when the news of her being tortured spread, because, you know, that's illegal and it's going to look bad. The conservatives were so desperate to implicate the queen that the Lord Chancellor of England himself had actually broken the law. Obviously, they're not going to prosecute him for it, but he did break the law. Although Askew failed to incriminate Catherine, Gardiner did manage to procure evidence regarding, like, some religious books that were forbidden, and a warrant of arrest was issued against Catherine. She was warned by her physician, Thomas Wendy, that they were going to arrest her, and so he told her to submit before Henry, show that she was humble and that she submitted to him, and then he would probably be happy with her again. So Catherine was obviously terrified that she faced the same fate as her predecessor, Endes Anne Boleyn, but mostly Catherine would probably be most prevalently on her mind right now because she's, like, very recent. And so she took Wendy's advice, and she went to the king, and she protested her weakness as a woman and the fact that men were superior to women by the given grace of God or whatever, I don't know. She was like, Henry, I only actually argued with you because you were hurt, and I was trying to take your mind off of things because I know that you like to debate things I know that that's something that you enjoy, so I was trying to make you happy, but I don't actually think that. I was just trying to learn from you. Yeah, a load of crap, but he believed it. He was like, is that so, sweetheart? Okay, then we're best friends again. Okay, Henry. She's really smart, so good job, Catherine Parr, for fully thinking on your feet. Super proud of you. But yeah, I just find it really funny that she just, like, spit out this total, like, she made it up. Henry was like, yeah. Really? It just proves that he wanted to believe her, right? He probably didn't want to get rid of another wife. And also, it's not like he doesn't love these women. Well, love in his own weird way. Like, so he's just like, really? Okay. If you really didn't mean it, then yes, we're best friends again. But the next day, Henry didn't, like, tell them not to arrest her. He just, like, was like, oh, yeah, we're best friends again. So then the Chancellor arrived with a detachment of the guard, like, the next day to arrest Catherine. And Henry was like, knave, errant knave, beast and fool, and ordered him to leave his sight. Just like, get out. Like, what? Henry, you need to cancel it before it happens, my dude. I don't know. He's just so dumb sometimes. The collapse of the plot against Catherine Parr signaled, like, the end of the conservatives' brief period of ascendancy. Henry's health is deteriorating very, very quickly. So the Seymour faction, which is more progressive, which was led by Edward's uncle, Edward Seymour, Earl of Hertford, was acting to destroy its enemies, the Howards and Bishop Gardiner, which are conservatives, and take control of the government. Mary was very untouched by these shifts of power, and so she remained in relative peace at court because Henry continued to show her, like, every sign of favor. One of the actual last entries in Henry's, accounts is the purchase of a horse for Mary, a wet gray gelding. Just like one of the last things in Anne's accounts was a purchase for Elizabeth. On the evening of December 26th, Henry ordered his will to be brought to him because he wanted to make some changes to the list of executors, some people he wanted to bring in, some people he wanted to take out. The crown would obviously go directly to Edward. No, he's actually going to change it last minute, guys. Can you imagine? What? Why would he ever do that? Yeah. So, it goes to Edward and any lawful heirs of his body, and then in default after that, it goes to Mary upon condition that she won't ever get married without the written and sealed consent of a majority of Edward's surviving Privy Council. So, like, she can't get married unless, like, I don't know. It's just not a fun time for her. But it has to be, like, Edward's surviving Privy Council. So if Edward dies, the people that were his privy counselors have to say, oh, yeah, Mary, you can get married to this guy.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't think she'd choose the same privy counselors. That's just a little weird. In the event of Mary's childless death, Elizabeth would succeed. I just find it so funny that they definitely thought that that was absolutely never going to happen. And Elizabeth was like, ha-ha! Guess what? Akka... Yeah. Akka, excuse me. So tired. The succession was then conferred on the Grey and Clifford families, who were the descendants of Henry's younger sister, Mary. Grandma Mary. Where's my crown, Henry? Where is my crown? Though he had suffered for some time from ulcerated legs, obesity, and gout, Henry's health had declined very, very quickly since the new year, and so he actually remained confined to the privy chamber with a really high fever. On January 10th, the French ambassador wrote to Francis I that neither the Queen nor the Lady Mary was allowed to see him. His doctors knew that death was coming, but they were afraid of being punished by him for telling him that, and so they didn't tell him. They're like, we don't want to tell him. He's going to, like, execute us. Yeah. But Sir Anthony Denny finally volunteered to inform the king of his imminent demise. He was like, you're not likely to live, Henry. You should now prepare yourself to die. Okay. By 2 in the morning of January 28th, 1547, Henry was dead at 56 years old. Apothecaries, surgeons, and wax chandlers were immediately summoned to do their duties in spurging, cleansing, boweling, searing, embalming, furnishing, and dressing with spices the corpse. Okay. The body was wrapped in fine linen and velvet and tied with silk cords before the plumber and carpenter cased the corpse in lead. The coffin was then laid out in the middle of the privy chamber at Whitehall, and his chaplains and gentlemen watched over it. But here's the thing. They don't tell his kids right away. Yeah. For 3 days, the king's death was not made public, and it was kept secret from everyone except his counselors. Life at court continued without interruption. Henry's meals were brought into the Great Hall as usual. Like, he didn't show up, but they still brought his food, even though he was dead. Parliament remained in session, and anyone who requested an audience with the king was told that he was simply indisposed. He's dead. Just, what? As Van der Delft wrote to the emperor, I learned from a very confidential source that the king has departed this life, although not the slightest signs of such a thing are to be seen at court. But, the imperial ambassador wrote that Mary was very displeased with Edward Seymour because he did not visit her or send to her for several days after her father's death. So only once Edward's succession was secure would they tell Mary and Elizabeth of the fact that Henry had died. So I think they do that so that one of them can't go take the throne, but I don't think either of them want to. But yeah, so Edward has to be like safe before they tell Henry's daughters that their dad's dead. That just seems kind of not nice to me. Just like, what? In that, like, Elizabeth journal thing that I was obsessed with in, like, grade two, she found out, but she was like, they wouldn't tell Mary or I for, like, a really long time, and Mary's really upset about it. I'm just a little sad. And then they just, like, went down to, like, wherever he, like, his funeral or whatever, and Mary would, like, she was, like, really pissed off, and Elizabeth was like, I don't know how to act with her. Yeah, so, like, Henry's dead, Edward's king, Mary and Elizabeth are, well, Mary's kind of vibing, Elizabeth is vibing, but then she's gonna go to Catherine Parr's house, and Thomas Seymour's gonna really kill her vibe, although she doesn't seem to think so at first. But she definitely kills my vibe whenever I listen to I Don't Need Your Love from Rude. Six. Thanks for killing my vibe, Thomas Seymour. Screw you. Like, actually, I don't understand why they chose to make an entire song about him. It's just because, like, this is, like, a complete tangent, but, like, Kitty's entire song is, like, reclaiming herself. from her sexual abusers. Meanwhile, we have an entire love song dedicated to the man who sexually assaulted a 13-year-old. Like, no? Okay, that's, like, really, I don't know, it just really bothers me. It's like, they don't even, like, mention it. Like, if they mentioned it, I could deal with it, but they don't. That's why I wrote Stand Idly By, that's what that one's called. Yeah. Okay, so, like, that's the end of our Mary story for this episode, y'all. You should go follow us on Twitter now, because I have actually been trying to make an effort to post sometimes, and it's really awkward that Katie's our only follower, because everything I see, I know that she's the only person that has seen. That's just really weird to me. Yeah. It's just like I'm like DMing her personally. Yeah. I don't know. It's really just really not fun for me. So you should also go follow our Instagram, because I post on that a lot more.
Love that.
And it's fun. I mostly just make memes and put them on there.
I love them. They're the highlight of my day.
Grace likes them. They're funny. Yeah. I've been trying to post on our TikTok. We actually have like 6 followers on our TikTok now. So pretty sure that like some of them are us, but whatever, it's fine. You should go follow our TikTok, because I'm funny on there too, and I am really trying to make an effort to get on there, because that's how Lena and Ian got so Gleek TikTok famous. Ooh. Because they post on TikTok all the time, and that's how everyone found them, that's why they listened to their podcast. So we're gonna try to do that too. Go, if I know guys, I can see, I have the analytics of who listens to our podcast. And I know that 30% of you listen on Apple Podcasts. So what you're going to do, please, is you're going to go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more people find us. Even if you don't listen on Apple Podcasts, but you have an Apple device that has Apple Podcasts on it, you're going to go do the same thing. Okay? Thank you. We really, really appreciate it, guys. It would be really sweet of you if you could do that, because we would like more listeners. Although, y'all are pretty awesome for listening. You should go follow Grace on TikTok at @thelovely_bookworm.
I'm still slumping.
She started to post a little bit more again. She was on a slump for a while.
I'm sorry.
But she did post yesterday, and her voice scared me. It wasn't that it sounded bad. It was just like, why is Grace in my ears all of a sudden? Yeah, I'm just on like... I'm not going to say it on here, but... Oh, my TikTok for you page is interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, you should go. Grace, what should they do?
It's the long weekend, right? Stuff is hard. School is hard. Life is hard. Pandemic is hard. So you're just gonna, you know what you're gonna do? You're gonna go, you're gonna sit down, and you're either gonna sit outside and just, like, breathe, or you're gonna sit inside, look outside, and breathe. Or if you don't like meditation,
you should,
because I don't
get,
like meditation
like,
either.
Meditation
I get it.
App
just
up.
Feel like
if you have it. Meditation like, isn't doing anything though.
Like,
meditation is literally just
stop
sitting there
for a
breathing.
Second and just be like, okay.
That's what it is.
We good.
I got taught how to meditate at church camp when I was like 7. I don't know why they taught us how to meditate, but they did. Yeah, honestly, it was really fun, except for the fact that we all kept getting in trouble because we kept laughing and, like, poking each other. Yeah, church camp was real time. Yeah, so it is, I don't even know, Easter Sunday is the anniversary of when Chapuis recognized Anne, so, like, go... I don't know, do something that reminds you of Anne Boleyn, because she deserves it. And also, I'm sad. I have sad feelings about her right now. I'm reading Fatal Throne again, and it's just, I skip the Henry chapters every single time, because I don't want to hear him try to, like, whine about how hard his life was. Yeah. We love all of you very, 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 very much. And you're from, like, a bunch of different countries, which is really cool. So, if you, like, you can also, if you on anchor.fm, you can leave us a voice memo.
Yeah.
No one has ever done that before. And if we got one, I'd probably cry. So, you should do that. And then I can cry because it would be a happy cry. Yeah.
Thanks.
Have a good
listening.
Day, everyone. We love you all very much. And you're pretty awesome. Here's here's a kiss on your forehead.
Woo.
Get three today.
Bye.
Because I get three more days off school.